As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network. All right, welcome to the 3-0 show. Ricciaroli, Eno Saris here with you. We are missing our third amigo, Derek Van Riper, off this week. Plenty to discuss, though, in baseball still, Eno. It is Thursday, June 2nd, coming off of that long Memorial Day weekend. We have so much baseball, but I want to start with the Mets because they've won 5 games in a row. They swept the Phillies. They play again in D.C. looking for a sweep over the Nationals. 10.5 games up. Are you ready to declare the Mets in early June as NL East champions?
I mean, the rest of the division looks pretty messed up right now. I mean, they're already calling for Joe Girardi's job in Philadelphia. Ken Rosenthal wrote a great column saying the problems run deeper than the manager, which is usually something I agree with, but and I'm not saying in this case it's any different, but, you know, in this case, bullpen and defense were like pretty obvious flaws, you know, that we talked about even when we talked about them in nice glowing terms in the preseason. We knew that those were possibilities for it to go bad. I think my prediction was that it would either go really well and they could win the division or go really badly because of the bullpen and the defense. So it seems like we're getting the latter. In Philadelphia, Atlanta is like waiting for that, you know, late season bounce and, you know, getting everybody healthy. But Charlie Morton hasn't, you know, seemed 100% correct. They just can't seem to get it going either. It's either they score a bunch of runs or they pitch well. It doesn't seem like they do both at the same time. So, you know, they are right now, I think the best record in baseball by wins, you know, tied with the Yankees by winning percentage, just a step below. They're projected to be the second best team in baseball or the third best team in baseball. They're projected to finish with 96 wins. You know, I think they've got it. Famous last words, but I think they've got it.
I know, you know, you'd be so proud of me. I go on SNY once a week or so. And I said to them, hey, let's look at these Fangraphs offensive stats, because all winter we talked about how great the Mets rotation was. Well, they're obviously missing Scherzer and they're missing DeGrom for a few more weeks. And it's like, how have they been able to do this? They've been able to do this because their lineup's really good. Their WRC plus entering yesterday, second only to the Dodgers. Their strikeout rate, they've cut from over 23% to 19%, top four in the big leagues. Their batting average with balls in play, also top two in baseball. So they've really upgraded that lineup, I think, very quietly. And I know that the Scherzer acquisition and, you know, kind of getting this great rotation, or what we thought was going to be this great rotation, I think we all kind of overlooked what they did offensively. But Starling Marte has been ridiculously good. Francisco Lindor, after having a little bit of a rough patch, really back on track. So I'm with you. I hate saying, because it's the Mets, I hate saying for these poor fans who have seen these these epic collapses before that it's over. But I just don't see how Atlanta catches them. Do you? They'd have to have like a ridiculous historical run here. And I just don't know if I've seen that from a Braves team that has struggled to put together any kind of consistency at all.
Yeah, I think that you were really hit the nail on the head with the strikeout rate thing. You know, when the Astros and Cubs went on their little mini runs and won it all, they were the two teams that had improved their strikeout rate year over year the most when they won it all. So, you know, the fact that the Mets were able to do that and, you know, become third or fourth best in strikeout rate in the big leagues, I think that bodes really well for them. They're putting a lot of balls in play. They're doing it powerfully. I think we also have to kind of recalibrate what we think of as league average, because Lindor's 260 average, 346 OBP, and 444 slugging, some might say, that's okay. That's not superstar. Well, that's 28% better than league average. So, you know, in past years, you might have said, oh, that looks kind of average-ish. No, that's average-ish is what J.D. Davis is doing with a 232 average, a 326 OBP, and a 341 slugging. So that's exactly league average these days. And, you know, with him and Escobar kind of putting up league average lines and being the worst in the lineup, they really have, you know, they put together a really representative lineup that they can hang with anyone. And, you know, part of this is that their home park, you know, suppresses offense and makes them look worse than they are. So when it comes to the Braves, though, you know, they're at the other end of the spectrum when it comes to strikeouts. You know, they are number one in the big leagues in strikeout rate right now. And that's something that, you know, it means a lot during the season, but it also means a lot in the postseason. So I just can't see them, even if they maybe sneak they put together a run and sneak in as a wild card. I don't know that I would have them as a favorite to repeat in the World Series.
Which is so weird, because have they still not won three games in a row? As of like a couple days ago, the Braves hadn't won three games in a row, which is the most jarring stat of all time. I think like every team in baseball had at least put together a stretch of three wins in a row, even the really bad teams. But the Braves hadn't. I think that's still true. I'd have to double check unless they've won three in a row here over the last couple days. That to me just tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it? Like how?
Yeah. And the Padres on the other spectrum where they haven't lost three games in a row. So, you know, but yeah, the Braves, you know, Dansby Swanson took a little bit to get it going and he's finally got it going. Matt Olson's been up and down, but, you know, largely good. Riley's good. I think Ozzie Albies struggling has hurt them at the top of that lineup. I don't know that it's a struggle that will continue forever, because he still, you know, doesn't strike out, still hits the ball pretty powerfully. Maybe William Contreras's emergence here recently will give them, you know, kind of a third outfielder with a healthy Acuna. So maybe we should start the needle now, you know, with Acuna healthy. Maybe that's where we should start, you know, judging them. But on the pitching side, you know, Ian Anderson's taken a real step backwards. And though Kyle Wright has emerged, you know, with the fact that Ian Anderson and Charlie Morton are scuffling, has left them a little bit weak in the rotation. I think that's part of Shilly why the 3 days thing, right? Like if you have two guys struggling in a rotation, then one of them is going to come up every 3 days at least. And that's sort of how it's been with the Braves. But I really like Spencer Strider in that bullpen. I really like Kyle Wright. I do think Morton can get it together. So I think this is a wild card team. I just don't know if they're going to take the division.
Yeah, I agree with you. And DVR isn't here to make fun of me and say that I hate the Phillies, but I'm sorry. This team looks every bit as bad as we thought that they would defensively, and it's somehow worse. And they're not hitting, which is really what's made it stand out, right? And Bryce Harper hasn't been able to, because of that elbow, play the outfield. He's their best defensive outfielder. You look at the stats for them, Eno, and I just don't see them, one, climbing out of this hole, and two, like, where's the clear path forward? Do you blow it up again? Like, what is Dave Dombrowski, who constructed this team, who spent a lot of money on adding some of these guys like Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos, who can't field but can hit? Like, I don't even know where you go from here. It feels like The Phillies constantly have a bullpen problem, and they do again, even though the faces change, the problems remain. So what do you do here? As I agree with Ken Rosenthal in that Joe Girardi isn't really the problem here on one hand. On the other, do you let this play out because it's only June?
You know, I think that the problem with the Phillies is something that takes a really long time to fix. And so it's really hard to even know if it's being fixed. And it puts a lot of pressure on the major league team. And what I'm talking about is player development. I'm always talking about player development. And the problem with the Phillies is, if you think about where they're having the hardest time, why would you have a team that's really bad defensively? Well, that's because you're old up the middle, or you're trying to paper over up the middle. Odubel Herrera, Didi Gregorius, even Segura, they're old up the middle. And that's when you try to just take old free agents and sort of paper over that with offense, you still leave yourself vulnerable up the middle defensively. Just an update on how they're doing. Defensive runs saved over at Fangraphs says they're the worst team in baseball defensively. And just to give you a sense of who's down there with them, it's actually, I think, instructive to realize the Giants are down there. The Giants are a good team, but they're an old team that's sort of trying to paper over some issues, right? They had Yastrzemski and Brandon Crawford, the oldest shortstop in baseball, up the middle. So then it's the Nationals, who also have a player development problem. The Athletics, who I think their player development is not great. The Rockies and the Reds. That's the bottom of the league defensively. The White Sox are there, but they're not in the same stratosphere, because the White Sox are -7 and the Phillies are at -31.
So -31.
Yeah. So it's a big difference, and it's a bad offense. So what's happening is, where do relievers come from? Relievers come from failed starters, like success stories on the player development side, right? It's like, oh, here's a guy who was like a 40th round pick. I don't even exist anymore, but here's a guy who was, really late pick, or a guy we signed out of men's league. Isn't that what you hear out of good teams, right? Here's this guy. He was playing in men's league last week. We put him in front of the track, man. We did some diddly bop, boop, bop. He's throwing a sweeper now, and he's the third best pitcher on the Dodgers. That's good player development. So I know that the Phillies have been doing things under the hood to make it better. And so you kind of want to be like, you don't want to pull the plug too early, right? But it's like, is it working? You're kind of looking around. Is it working? Mickey Moniak. Yeah. Is our player development working? Mickey Moniak. And then he breaks his hand. So maybe Moniak comes back and gives them a solid center fielder defensively. It's kind of one of the things they need. Maybe Bryson Stott can get it going and give them a good defensive and offensive shortstop. But that's where you're looking in Philadelphia, but not to the next free agent. The next free agent's not going to solve the problem, because the next free agent is going to be 27, 28, 29. They're not going to be at their peak value defensively, and they're going to be post-peak by nature. So,
yeah, it is so fascinating. You read those teams off, and those are teams that have been awful, one, and teams that don't really have well thought of minor league systems. So there's definitely a correlation there. The Nationals, I don't think people expected them to be good this year, but nobody expected them to be this bad. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that kind of show up defensively. And there's not this next wave of let's get excited for these top prospects. So it's been a really unfortunate year in DC. Of course, GM Mike Rizzo goes on the radio today and says what everybody knew, but still made a big deal about, that Juan Soto's not going anywhere. He's got 2 more years under team control. It doesn't make any sense to trade him. They're trying to sell the team. Do you want to be known as the owner or the GM who traded away Juan Soto? That doesn't seem like a resume builder to me. But they're just going to have to.
I think you're a Nationals fan. You're rooting for them to sell the team before Soto goes, because I think any sane long-term owner of the Nationals would say, I want this guy to go into the Hall of Fame with my, there's no Nationals hat in the Hall of Fame. So don't you want to buy a spot in the Hall of Fame at the very least, and he's given you a World Series, and he's loved, and he's a really good leader from what I can tell on the field. So I would hope that they sell before they trade Juan Soto.
I would think so, because to me selling him in July. I don't even know if there's a package that exists that's good enough to say, yeah, that's good enough for 2.5 years of Juan Soto, right? Mm-hmm. Is there?
I mean, it would have to be like a young major leaguer plus like a top five type prospect plus some extras, you know, like I don't think this would work, but it would have to be for the Dodgers. It had to be like Gavin Lux, right? To start, yeah. Right? Gavin Lux to start, because there's, you know, four or five years maybe of control left with Gavin Lux, could be your starting shortstop right now. So Gavin Lux, who's one of their Miguel Vargas, who's a yeah. well thought of third base prospect that does everything right and is near, he's like double A. So Miguel Vargas, and then you might even have to throw Bobby Miller in, the guy who threw 100 in spring training and turned everyone on their head. So like if you're the Dodgers, does it even make sense? Because you're like, well, Gavin Lux is a major league piece for us, and he's really important to our depth. Miguel Vargas, like Justin Turner is, you know, getting older in the tooth, getting long in the tooth, I think is the word. and we need the next third baseman, and everybody needs starting pitching depth. So, you know, I could see the Dodgers being like, that's a pretty hefty price. In fact, Gavin Lux was supposed to be on the table for one of the Guardians, players, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, and they never pulled the trigger on that. So for Lindor or for Jose Ramirez. So, you know, I think the price is almost too high to the point where it doesn't make sense for either side.
Yeah. And teams now, it's shifted to where teams are very hesitant to give away 4 or 5 young guys, right? Whereas 10 years ago, those moves were more likely to happen. And this is what makes tanking hard, right? Is because teams just don't part with their top prospects anymore.
Remember the Sale trade? Yeah. It was a Sale trade. Juan Moncada. I wish I remember the other parts.
Ooh, even. Yeah.
But that was
a big one.
That was a big one because Moncada was like, oh, like here's a top five prospect.
Move. Yeah. And you look at, and he's a big part of the White, you know, like he's a big part of the White Sox. So
right.
Teams just don't do that anymore because I feel like the risk is high, and teams want to hold on to these prospects. They want to keep these young, cheap guys as best they can. Efficiency has become so buzzy. I just don't even think if the Nationals wanted to trade Juan Soto, they could get anything close to his value back this July. Maybe next July when they have a new ownership, when they could kind of stare down the barrel and say, like, are we improving? Is the rebuild coming soon or is it not coming soon? But to me, it just really would be totally unprecedented here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to get back to, you mentioned the Reds in the bottom defensively, but they're not the worst team in baseball anymore. They had a winning May, which I did not see coming.
Nice.
The Royals, 16-32 are now the worst team in baseball. One of those teams that like, I didn't think would be this bad. The Kansas City Royals. I also didn't think the Tigers would be this bad. So I really was much higher, I think, on the AL Central. And maybe a lot of people were, but the Reds, they're out of it, right? There's no way they're turning it around, but there are some better things going on there than there were even just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, they had to get a little bit healthy in the lineup. Votto's actually sort of turned it around since he came back from the IL and ditched the hockey puck on the bottom of his stick that he had, on the bottom of his bat that he had. So You know, they've got a little bit right in the offensive side. And then on the pitching side, I think, you know, Hunter Green has taken his lumps early on. It's very high stuff, low command kind of package that he's bringing to the table. But with that kind of strikeout rate that he's got, I think you can bet on him long term. And I think you're just going to see him kind of go through those ups and downs this year. If they could ever get Lodolo, Green, and Malley going at the same time, I think that they would actually have the formation of a decent starting pitching staff. Alexis Diaz, Edwin Diaz's brother, throws a pitch so unique it has no pitch comps. That fastball he throws Edwin Diaz's fastball minus 10 inches of horizontal movement. It's a very bizarre pitch that he throws, and unique is good in baseball. So, you know, between him and maybe a healthy Lucas Sims, you know, they can start to make that back end of that bullpen work a little better too. So, you know, I think there's stuff that you can dream on. And in fact, I think a little bit more to dream on than in Kansas City. Bobby Witt Jr. is starting to kind of show us who he is, and he is definitely a building block, and I love that about him. But the Royals have a real problem when it comes to pitching development. I think that maybe them and the Nationals are at the very bottom of the league when it comes to pitching development. And one of the reasons is I think that there's a disconnect between their scouting process and their development process. They have acquired all these pitchers that have excellent sinkers in college. The game doesn't really value sinkers the way it used to. Nobody really wants sinkers, but they've drafted guys with sinkers. Then their coaching staff says, hey, everyone's trying to throw the four seam up in the zone. Can you throw a four seam up in the zone? So then all these guys that used to throw sinkers are trying to throw four seams, and it's not working. And so they throw a really bizarre kind of flat four seamer. If you look at them in aggregate, the Royals do. And they, I don't know, maybe they should go back to, you know, being sinker guys and try to be different. Because like I said, unique is good. If they were a team full of sinker ballers, maybe things would be different. But right now they're stuck between the old school and the new school in a way that's just awkward. And you can just tell it just looking at their staff. You're like, what guys, what are you doing? What is the plan here?
Yeah, that is awkward. Cause as you know, all these big league teams do things a little bit differently. The Yankees value the cutter so much. And you've seen a big part of Nestor Cortez's transformation has been the increased cutter usage. Garrett Cole, you've seen these guys come to the Yankees and use more cutters. You go to the Rays, you know you're going to get a better changeup, right? Like maybe your changeup's okay, but the Rays are going to make your changeup better, and all of a sudden you're going to be a guy who has a good changeup. But it's so interesting that the Royals seem to have that disconnect. Now, the Nationals don't really have any clear pattern. They have just struggled to develop these guys. They don't have any late-round success stories. They don't really have, outside of the obvious candidates, you know, like the Steven Strasburgs of the world, the can't miss guys, Cade Cavalli, another guy who could come up pretty soon for them. They don't have those, like, we took this fourth rounder and he added 5 miles an hour to his fastball. We did that story, I think, last year together. Remember, kind of charting teams
among the worst teams in baseball at adding velocity.
Correct. Yeah. So they really haven't embraced a lot of the new school stuff. And they're still kind of stuck behind in many facets, which again, you don't have to be the most analytic driven organization, to win, but you have to find an edge somewhere.
And you have to have an idea. It seems stuck. Like maybe they could have won using old school. Like the old school baseball you could use that as a narrative for why they won it all. I mean, they put the ball in play a lot and they had a really good bullpen. And they had a decent amount of sinkers on that squad, but, you know, I guess it didn't continue to work, or they tried to modernize their old school approach. Either way, they're stuck in the middle in a sort of no man's land right now.
Yeah. And they got old. That 2019 team was the oldest team in the majors. When you have an older team, like we're seeing this year with the Giants, your window, I feel like, is so short, right? It's really hard to continue to sustain that success. It's almost like bullpens. You know, people say, don't ever get a guy who's coming off a great year because relievers are cyclical. Well, when you have a team that's older and you have guys who are 35, 36 years old and they play deep into October, or they have this really great season where they have a new high in games played or whatever, that takes a toll on a guy who's 35, 36 versus a guy who's 22, 23.
I mean, you're saying you're seeing it in Brandon Belt's knees. You know, he had it drained again. He, you know, he's out. You know, the Giants do look old. The one thing that I like about the Giants versus, you know, that older Royal squad is they seem to have leaned into this idea. They're like, yeah, we're old, but we have a ton of old guys. You know, like we got old guys everywhere, and we're they're all on short-term deals, and they all do different things. This is something I noticed recently. I looked at high ball hitters versus low ball hitters on the Giants, and it's almost exactly split down the middle. They almost have exactly half the lineup is high ball hitters and exactly half low ball hitters, exactly half left-handers, exactly half right-handers. And so in any given game, they're trying to get the platoon advantage, but also be like, oh, this is a pitcher who likes living high in the zone. Let's put our high ball hitters in as much as we can, or alternate high ball, low ball, high ball. And if you actually look at box scores, you'll see, oh yeah, there's like, oh, all the high ball hitters got hits in this game and all the low ball hitters got hits in this game. So like, I think it's like engineered and it's like leaning into being old. Whereas, I don't know if the Royals, you know, they did sign Carlos Santana and they had a couple moves here and there, but I just don't see it the same as like all these little pieces, the Tommy LaStellas, the, you know, the Darren Ruffs, all the stuff that the Giants are doing to kind of manipulate that lineup. So maybe it's bias. I'm definitely out here on the West Coast, but it just seems like you can also just point to results and be like, hey, the Giants are old. The Royals are old. We're old. The Giants are still winning games.
True, true. Though it does seem like because they were this big success story last year that they've taken a step back. Obviously, the Padres are playing really well, and the Padres were really a team that underperformed, especially down the stretch last year. But the NL West is fascinating because I still see it as like a three-team race. I'm not counting the Giants out June 1st. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're not 10 games back, 20 games back. I still think they could make some noise here. I think that's still one of the more interesting divisions that are left in baseball. The NL East, as we discussed, not super interesting. But there are a couple races that I think are still worth watching.
Yeah, we have to push back on Joe Poznanski.
what did he say?
Tweet. He had a tweet about where we are in baseball this year, and he said it's June 1st, and it's the start of June. Here, let me get this tweet going. It's the start of June. Let's go around the league and pick a rep. Nope, that's not it. What? I've got it here. There are 4 months left in the baseball season, and basically everything is already decided.
No, I don't agree with that. Listen, I'm looking at this right now. The Yankees are up 5.5 games entering today. The Twins are up 5. Houston's up 5. Part of that is because the Angels have lost 6 in a row, though. That just tells you how quickly things can change.
Yeah.
I do think the East is over, but the East is the only – and at least is the only double-digit – right now, the Dodgers only have a 3-game lead over the Padres, and Milwaukee only has a 3-game lead over the Cardinals. So I think outside of the NL East, what division would you put down a sizable chunk of money and say, yeah, this is over?
Yeah, where would I do that? I might do it on the Astros.
Really? You think the Angels are all done?
No, I don't think they're all done. I just don't think that they're necessarily like a division winner. But could be. One thing that we noticed with Noah Syndergaard, as well as he was pitching, the velo wasn't there. I've got a stuff metric. He's nowhere near where he used to be with his stuff. And we saw him kind of go up against the Yankees, a really good offense, and really struggle. So if Syndergaard's not quite there, Patrick Sandoval's a little over his skis. The rotation is decent, but it's still Otani and some guys for the most part. And so, you know, I think if I was to pick one, either it would be either the Astros or the Dodgers. And the Dodgers only have a 3-game lead, but the Dodgers are a juggernaut. They have so much depth. They haven't even started, you know, rolling out some of these young players. Like Bobby Miller hasn't even pitched yet. So, you know, it'd be one of those two if I had to pick one. But I think that, you know, my hemming and hawing, that tells you something. I mean, I'm definitely not putting everything on the Yankees, where we've seen the Yankees get old quick and get injured and fall back. And the Blue Jays seem to be, you know, kind of the little engine that could maybe. And then the Rays are always like, oh, they're about to get Shane Boz back. oh, amazing, like the best pitching prospect in baseball. They're just about to get him back. And so, you know, I think the AL East is far from done.
Yeah, Toronto's won 6 games in a row. This can all change with a hot week or two, a hot 10 game stretch or two. So I agree with you. My issue with saying the Dodgers could run away with it is the Padres are going to get Fernando Tatis back.
Mm-hmm.
So can't that count for something? Shouldn't it?
It's pretty big because right now the Padres are a Hosmer and Manny show. And just even adding a third musketeer, you know, puts a lot less pressure maybe than Cronenworth and Profar can kind of emerge and lengthen that lineup. And then maybe they've got a trade in them. They usually have one trade in them. So, I guess that's decently close. And then I think it's odd to say that everything's decided in a year where we're going to have 12 playoff teams. And
yes,
we're going to have a lot of wild card situations. So even if I don't know that the Braves are going to, you know, recover from being 4 games under 500 on June 1st and take the division, I do think the Braves are a contender for the wild card. I mean, in order to get into the postseason, you have to be a top 6 team in the NL. So we're talking, let's take the division winners right now, Mets, Brewers, Dodgers. Then you're going to maybe put the Padres in and the Cardinals. So then you're going to have a dogfight for 6th with the Braves. Maybe the Cubs get it together. I doubt it, actually. This is actually a little bit worse than I thought. So for the last wild card, you'd be talking Braves or Giants.
Yeah.
That's a little bit less exciting than I thought, actually.
I mean,
maybe the D-backs.
It doesn't mean it's over, though. I mean, some of these teams could kind of come out of nowhere. I don't see, I don't really see the point of that tweet because I think, other than the NL East, there's not these huge, big divisional leads. It's still going to be fun to watch. Maybe the wild cards won't be that fun, but the divisional races are tight. They're far from over. Like the Twins, White Sox, right? Like, the White Sox could get hot. The White Sox were widely predicted to win that division.
Right. Yeah, that one could get tight. That one
could flip.
Yeah,
like the Brewers Cardinals could flip. Like, you just, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of intrigue still. And again, outside of the NL East, and the Mets are just a fun team to watch. Nobody thought the Phillies and Braves were going to be this bad. Outside of the NL East, I'm not ready to crown any of these people division winners.
Yeah, and I think the AL wild card will be tighter because even if we take the Yankees, Twins, and Astros, the next three, so you take the Blue Jays, White Sox, and Angels, and you're like, okay, that's 6, but that leaves the Rays out. That leaves the Guardians out. That leaves the Rangers, who are 500 team, out. That leaves the Mariners, who I think could still put a run together and at least end up above 500. So, you know, how about this? Let's give let's give Joe some credit. He's an amazing writer and I love him to death. What is the problem? Are there more tanking teams? I don't think the Nationals are tanking. They acquired players. They were trying to win. The Marlins were obviously trying to win. The Orioles are tanking, but they're trying to get out of that. Like, they're starting to put players out there. The Royals are in year whatever of a rebuild. I think the Tigers, it's like, you know, it's just
trying
hard
to win.
Yeah, I think they're trying to win. They're starting to buy players, and you know, so I don't know why necessarily there's maybe a little bit above average stratification at this point in the season. I don't know that it's necessarily a systemic problem where like all these teams are trying to beat each other to the bottom.
Exactly. No, I don't. And so, not to switch topics here, but I've got to. I've got to get to like the stupidest, but also most addicting storyline of baseball right now. It's like, it's almost like, do you read TMZ or Us Weekly or any of those like celebrity sites at all? Like,
from time to time.
Exactly. Because you just can't look away because you like drama and you like petty stuff when it doesn't involve you. We always do. And the fantasy football
story. Why is everybody dating Pete Davidson? I don't know.
Yes. like, that to me is what this fantasy football story is about. That is absolutely the Jock Peterson, Tommy Pham fantasy football story, which I thought was dead, but came up off the mat.
because Tommy's giving us more details.
Yes, and now he's dragging in Mike Trout, of all people, who, as we record this on Wednesday, Mike Trout is actually going to meet the media today at Yankee Stadium to discuss being the commissioner in this league.
I had heard his name before it came out, because the players were discussing it in the Rangers clubhouse on Friday night. And I had heard that Trout was the commissioner. And I had heard some grumblings from them that he had changed some rules after the draft. Now, we are in a much lower stakes fantasy league, and we changed some settings after the draft because we used to be a weekly lineup and it was kind of hard to make any changes. Yeah. So should we slap DVR? That is the question.
Ooh, maybe.
The big difference is we don't have thousands of dollars. In fact, hundreds of thousands of dollars online.
Yes. It is a very high stakes. I was explaining this to someone that, like, what people don't realize, this isn't like every clubhouse, as you know, has their own fantasy league, and that's worth some money. But this is a high stakes, high roller league where guys were from different teams, like Pham and
Jock
Peterson, and never played together.
Yeah, that's rarer. And that's actually the source. That right there is a big source of the problem, because obviously I think that most people are like anti-Tommy in this situation, and I am not advocating for violence. But I there's just a part of me that sort of I understand what happened. Like I could see that happening in a fantasy league I'm in, right? Because what happened is, you know, Jock is kind of like texting the group chat, like, you know, kind of like aggressive razzing, you know, but I don't know you, dude. And like, so you're making fun of my team and my teammates, and I know them and I don't know you. Like, what is this? Right. And then on top of that, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line. And then on top of that, like Mike Trout, who didn't want to be the commissioner, changed some rules after the draft, which I do play some high stakes leagues now. None of those are changing the rules after the draft. Right. Like, and we don't have a group text because people would probably say some mean things to each other and it would get out of hand. So I just like, has anyone ever not watched the league? Has everyone forgotten about the league? There was like a whole show about how fantasy can bleed over into real life. Like there was a whole, it was like it had episodes and episodes and episodes. So people are acting like, hey, this is the weirdest thing they've ever seen. I'm like, no, this is just like a real life episode of the league. And two, people get crazy when there's lots of money on the line. Like it's just real, you know. People get they get very sort of parliamentarian. Like if you're playing poker with your friends and someone puts his hand down and goes to take a pee, you know, like no big deal, right?
Yeah.
If you're playing poker and it's a 50,000 buy-in and like they just leave their card sitting there or something, you know, like everyone, like if you do one little thing wrong procedurally, everybody at the table is like, who's this joker?
Yeah.
What's he doing here?
It's serious stuff. Exactly. It's like, it's like sports betting. Like you don't ever see them change the lines after people, you know what I mean? After
we took your bet at this, but like, sorry, we're only going to pay this back.
Yeah. Like that would go over really well in Vegas, right? But yeah, you're right. Trout didn't want to be commissioner, according to Tommy Pham.
Because being commissioner sucks.
Yeah. They made him commissioner. And now he's got to answer for this at a press conference at Yankee Stadium today. Like, is this the most ridiculous storyline of the baseball season?
It really is. And it's also going to be chilling for anybody who wants to be a commissioner, because nobody wants to be commissioner. And you kind of try to convince them to be the commissioner. Like, who wants to be the commissioner of this league now, next year?
No one. They'll be commissioner.
This league is not going to exist.
Yeah.
Or the last commissioner had to go to the media and talk about it.
It became a national news story. And by the time this comes out on Thursday, Trout will have already spoken. And I'm really curious, you know, if he's going to take the like serious stance or if he's going to just kind of have fun with this, because this is a ridiculous storyline. Are we going to see maybe a little personality here, or is he just going to play this very straight?
No, that's interesting, because like the Derek Jeter approach would be to find a way to say something very mildly funny but not give any details. That's my bet. Mike Trout is kind of comes from the Derek Jeter school where he doesn't give you much and he just tries to get rid of the story.
Yes. In a well nice way, though. He's always cordial, right? You never leave me like, oh, Mike Trout or Derek Jeter, what a jerk. Like, I was in New York in 2009 and you would leave a conversation for after a few minutes feeling good. And then you'd get upstairs and you'd be like,
I don't have anything.
This is terrible. It's like, what? Nothing.
You're transcribing and you're like, oh, okay, use any of this.
No, you're like, oh God. Speaking of Derek Jeter, he's on Instagram and Twitter now. Did you
What's
follow
he gonna
him?
Say? Yeah, no, I did not.
I did. I was like, maybe he'll be more interesting than he was as a player. I don't know.
I guess I mostly only follow players back that I think might actually DM me.
Good.
Can't
to know.
Imagine Derek Jeter sliding to my DMs.
I think you should try it now. I think you should follow him and be like, hey, Jeets.
No, but you know, there's a good question there. It's like, how, like, what's his social media strategy going to be? Because if it's like his interviewing strategy,
yeah,
it's going to be a good big nothing burger.
No.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Speaking of the Yankees, we talked about them in the AL East. They're up right now on the Jays. I don't see this as being like the Mets at all. I think the Jays can make a run, but I am surprised with how well the Yankees have played. I don't think anyone saw Nestor Cortez coming, but in general, I think this Yankees team just looks like a much more cohesive unit than they did almost a year ago. Injuries haven't been nearly the factor. And as you mentioned, that's always going to be a little bit of an issue with an older team like the Yankees. But they just seem to be playing really well. They're second in runs scored in the American League. Again, you look at those batting averages and you're like, these are terrible. But they're actually really good because everyone is down right now. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised? I wasn't super high on the Yankees. I actually picked Toronto to win the division, and I think they still can. But it's getting harder and harder to envision kind of a collapse by the Yankees, barring just a rash of injuries.
You know, some parts of this is just the Yankees doing what they've always done, which is, you know, betting on stuff, you know, having guys with great breaking balls, being at the forefront of player development in terms of, you know, giving players new pitches, especially at the major league level. They've added pitches for Clark Schmidt. They've added pitches for Michael King. You know, they've helped Lucas Lucchi. Like they, you know, they do a lot of great things when it comes to pitching development, and they've advanced the sport when it comes to pitching development. They don't get as much pub maybe about it, but they're at the forefront of most, you know, these kinds of developments. So I think it's also relevant to point out that they've changed a little bit. Jordan Montgomery and Nestor Cortes, I think, represent a little bit of a different attitude for them. Those guys make it happen on command in lots of different pitches. And I'm not sure how much of an extended look, I think that it's at least part of the Yankees being like, okay, you know, we are a team that bets on stuff for the most part, but these guys keep making it happen, and we're going to give them all the rope they can get. So they're still on the offensive side, a team of huge people that hit the ball very hard, you know, but they also added Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who's not necessarily doing amazing, but he does bring a different dynamic to this offense where he puts a lot of balls in play. And they decided to go with defense instead of offense, and their catchers, have they yet hit a homer yet? Yes, Trevino's yes. Hit three, but at some point they hadn't had a homer from their catchers. So, you know, they kind of decided to go more defense at, you know, at catcher and shortstop, and tried to improve their up the middleness, even though they're an old team. And I think it's Yankees way as usual, with a couple wrinkles. You know, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, not a normal Yankee. You know, I think Nestor Cortes, not saying he's not a Yankee with a capital Y. I'm saying like they're kind of a new type of player that maybe wouldn't have gotten as much burn on old Yankee teams.
Yeah, Cortes just to me signifies that this Yankees team is a little different. But speaking of the Yankees, they are playing the Tigers this weekend. We should probably get into this week's player focus, brought to you by Sunday Leadoff on Peacock. It's going to be Aaron Judge because the spotlight's always on Aaron Judge. You know, big news this spring, obviously, when he turned down that extension offer by the Yankees. At the time, you were like, well, he's betting on himself. This is maybe risky. Now we sit here in early June and it's like, risky? This guy has played himself into a much bigger market. And if the Yankees don't sign him, the guy across town, Steve Cohen with the Mets, is licking his chops. And can you imagine the mutiny if somebody else ends up, especially if the Mets end up signing an Aaron Judge? What jumps out to you about the season that guy is having so far?
I mean, there's just so many bests, you know, career bests that he's throwing out there. He's always been a guy who hits the ball hard and barrels balls up. Right now, he's barreling over a quarter of the balls he puts in play. That's not normal. You know, that's not what other people do. It's definitely first by a long shot. Stanton is usually the guy that's there. He's second. Mike Trout is third with 22% to Aaron Judge's 26%. And then everybody's under 20%. You know what I mean? Like the three best, you know, kind of the three hardest hitters guys in baseball. Judge is the hardest hitting guy in baseball, but he's also just making more contact than he ever has before. You know, his strikeout rate is down. You know, it's just everything is almost at a career best where he's just doing everything as well as he can.
Doing exactly what you should do if you're a guy who turned down millions of dollars in an extension and want to get paid, right? I mean, it is just remarkable to see, and health permitting. I mean, as you mentioned, Stanton's usually the big bopper, but having this kind of a season from Judge, getting the output that they're getting from a guy like Cortes, who has become kind of their number one. There's a lot to like about this Yankees team right now.
Oh yeah. 100%. You know, I think the health thing is worth pointing out because Stanton, you know, has already had his things, and Aaron Judge is just a large human being. The one thing that the Yankees do try to do is build depth behind these guys. And as much as, you know, Judge is the Yankees and is the MVP of the Yankees and probably the MVP of the league, it is worth wondering what happens if him and Stanton are both down, and who will man that outfield with Hicks and Gallo. But at least Gallo seems to be turning it around. They've got some young youth in like Esteban Florial, maybe Miguel Andujar, who can step in and give them some outfield depth, you know, if that's the sort of thing happened. But this is why the Yankees build the team the way they do. They want to build it so that when everybody's healthy, they're the best team in baseball. And when people aren't healthy, they've got some guys who can step up.
Yep. And Aaron Judge is absolutely one of the guys that they're trying to build around. This has been this week's Player Focus. Change up your weekend with Sunday Leadoff only on Peacock. All right, Eno, I got to go. You've got to go. Please, in like 30 seconds, give the people a little bit of a tease about the new article you have up today that kind of takes virtual reality to a new level.
Oh yeah, Win Virtual Reality, which has been using, which has been helping major leaguers. It has some actual benefits. It can help you in training. One of the things it can do is sort of help you basically see the today's starting pitcher having a virtual plate appearance before you actually step in the box against them. So there's been some, you know, use at the major league level. They got a round of funding and are now going to produce a product for 13 to 15 year olds. So I kind of went through the differences between being a major leaguer. It's not as important for a, you know, kid in high school to see that night's starting pitcher to kind of, you know, make the third time through the order penalty worse. You know, like they're not thinking the same way. But you know, the idea is to like make it more of a social thing where there's you can kind of share your scores and make it more of like kind of a video game, but also have a training aspect to it. I think it's mostly a good thing. You know, if you live in a northern climate and it's the off season, you may not have a chance to get out there and take some real swings. Virtual swings can keep you kind of connected to the sport. There is a little bit of what Noah Jackson in my piece called the country clubification of baseball, where this is yet another thing, even though the price is lower now, $300 for an Oculus headset, $30 a month for this new program they're providing. That's still like a big chunk of change for certain families. Yeah. So, you know, that is part of the story of baseball right now. Not as fun to write and talk about, but definitely needs some light shown on it.
Absolutely. You can check out Eno's article on theathletic.com/MLB. You can also check out the latest on this fantasy football debacle, Ken Rosenthal's article about why Joe Girardi shouldn't go, all kinds of great stuff on there. Get your subscription to The Athletic for only $1 a month, theathletic.com/baseball show. We've got to go, as I said, Brett Ciroli, Eno Saris. We will be joined next week at full strength with Derek Van Riper. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is the 3-0 Show on the Athletic MLB channel.
At the 3-0 Show, you've always got the green light.